Hi, this is Melanie, and I am the next guest at On Screen and Beyond.
On Screen and Beyond, an inside look into the entertainment world featuring interviews with people from the movie, TV, and music industry, news on upcoming TV and DVD releases, and the rumor mill. And now, here's the host of On Screen and Beyond, Brian Zemrak.
Get ready, it's time for another edition of On Screen and Beyond. I'm your host, Brian Zemrak, and this is episode 557 of the show that keeps you updated on what's coming your way as far as upcoming new movies, remakes, sequels, TV and movie DVD releases, as well as our interview segment with a guest from the movie, TV, or music industry. This week on Screen and Beyond, we have a good one coming your way. Melanie is going to be joining us. Now, of course, she was at Woodstock, and her songs, Brand New Key, Lay Down, Ruby Tuesday, Look What They've Done to My Song, Ma, and it just goes on and on, all the things she's done. It's a great interview. She's so interesting to hear, and she's a wonderful guest. So get ready for Melanie. She's coming up in a few minutes right here on Screen and Beyond. And she's also going to be having a live stream concert on Saturday, June 26, 2021. Just in case you're listening, in the future here, you've missed it, but it's out there for this Saturday. So get ready for that. We're going to give you information about where you can find out all the information about how to get in on that concert. So it's going to be live streamed on the internet, and you can check it out. So get ready for that. That's coming up in a few minutes right here at On Screen and Beyond. Well, we've got a lot of things going on. I have completed updating all of season one of On Screen and Beyond. So we have, 150 or some odd episodes back on up, so you can listen to those. And, of course, we have over 557 episodes, and we're slowly getting them back online since we've made the move to our new provider. And it's just going to take me a long time. But season one is complete. It is there, so you can check that out. And also, be sure to tell a friend. And now that Apple has changed to their Apple Podcasts, how they do it, I'm not a big fan of it, but yet, at least not yet. It's a little confusing, and it doesn't give me the information that I normally get as far as, as a person who is getting info, listening to podcasts and things, because I listen to podcasts too. So I find it's not as helpful as it was. And the best way to turn around and get that information, because I think 67% of the people who listen to On Screen or Beyond are getting it from Apple. So if you subscribe, well, they don't call it subscribe anymore. Now they call it follow. So if you want to follow on Apple Podcasts, do that, because that's the way you're going to automatically get these episodes. And also, if you're not following, you can still find them, but you got to go and search. So, really, follow me on Apple Podcasts. It'll make it a lot easier for you. And on all the other podcast providers, check us out there. And what do you say? Let's get into it. It's time for Remake Madness on Screen and Beyond.
Please hang up and try
again. Remake Madness. Well, American Gigolo is getting a re-imaging, as they're calling it, but not on the big screen this time. John Bernthal, now, of course, he was in Walking Dead and all kinds of other things, too. He's going to be starring in it as Julian Kay, the role originated by Richard Gere, in a 10-episode TV show for Showtime. So might want to check that out when that comes our way. Keep you informed as far as when it is going to come out. And a remake of 1979's The Rose is, which originally had Bette Midler, of course, is in the works by Searchlight. And another adventure thriller set on Mount Everest is in the works. Ian McGregor will star in Everest. This one is set in 1921. That's it for Remake Madness. Coming up next on Screen and Beyond, upcoming new movies. Upcoming new movies, it looks like Richard Dreyfuss and Gabrielle Byrne will star in a Western thriller called Murder at Emigrant Gulch. And Paul Giamatti will star in a film called The Holdovers as a disliked teacher and a school cook and a student who can't go home for Christmas are stuck at the school over Christmas vacation. The comedy starts filming next year. And Rhea Perlman and Josh Peck are going to be joining the cast of a Netflix picture called 13 the Musical. Production is underway. And that's it for upcoming new movies. Next on Screen and Beyond, sequels. Sequels. It looks like Gerard Butler will star in a sequel to his film Greenland. The sequel is called Greenland Migration. And his family must leave the safety of the bunker to find a new home. Filming starts in 2022. Jessica Henwick of Matrix 4 has joined the cast of what else? Knives Out. The cast keeps getting bigger and bigger. And Code 8, Part 2, a science fiction sequel, has been picked up by Netflix. That's it for Sequel City. Coming up next on Screen and Beyond, what's coming away as far as TV on DVD? TV on DVD, Pennyworth, the complete second season, hits Blu-ray and DVD on July 13th. Star Trek Discovery Season 3 lands on Blu-ray and DVD on July 20th. And American Gods Season 3 on DVD and Blu-ray on July 20th. That's it for TV on DVD. Coming up next on Screen and Beyond, what's coming your way as far as movies on DVD? Movies on DVD, Columbia Classics 4K Ultra HD Collection Volume 2 arrives on September 14th. The collection includes an 80-page hardcover book with the following films: Anatomy of a Murder, Oliver, Taxi Driver, Stripes, Sense and Sensibility, The Social Networks, and 20 short films. And Raiders of Justice with Mads Mikkelsen will be riding on to Blu-ray and DVD on August 17th, and A Quiet Place Part 2 on Blu-ray and DVD and 4K on July 27th. That's it for movies on DVD. Coming up next on Screen and Beyond, it's TV and entertainment time. TV and entertainment time. Well, a spinoff of How I Met Your Mother called How I Met Your Father will land on Hulu, and it will star Hilary Duff. Season 10 of American Horror Story Double Feature will have actor Neil McDonough in the cast, and he will play Dwight Eisenhower. Now, no, that's not the president, but just has the same name, and that's going to be debuting on August 25th. And Ned Beatty, sadly, this past week, known for his roles including 1972's Deliverance, Network from 1976, and Superman with Christopher Reeves in 1978, has passed away at the age of 83. And that's it for TV and entertainment time. Coming up next on Screen and Beyond, we have an interview that you want to hear for sure. Melanie is coming our way. Brand New Key, Ruby Tuesday, Lay Down, all those songs and more. She has a live stream concert coming up Saturday, June 26, 2021. Going to get all the information on that coming up next, right here on Screen and Beyond, Melanie. Today on Screen and Beyond, we have the pleasure of having a music icon joining us. She performed on stage at Woodstock. She has won an Emmy, and over the years, she has given us wonderful music, and her hits include Lay Down, Candles in the Rain, Ruby Tuesday, Brand New Key, What Have They Done to My Song, Ma, The Nickel Song, Ring the Living Bell, and so many others. And she has a live stream concert coming up this Saturday, June 26, 2021, that you don't want to miss. It's Melanie. Melanie, welcome to On Screen and Beyond.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Now, Melanie, you know, there are only so many people, only a handful probably, that you can say one name for them and people know who it is.
Yeah, well, I used to be the only Melanie. I grew up with it, and it was a curse growing up because I used to wish, why couldn't my mom name me Jane or something, you know? Because what's your name? Melanie? Like Watermelanie? And, you know, things like that. So I had always wanted to blend, and with a name like Melanie, it just was impossible. But it was a good name for just using one name because there weren't any other Melanies Mm-hmm. It was before the Spice Girls.
Right, know? Yep.
And it was before Melanie Griffith.
Yeah.
And there were no other Melanies.
Yeah.
So, it was Gone with the Wind was a Melanie.
Now, you said that you wanted to blend in. Were you shy when you were growing up?
Oh, God. I was such an introvert. And, as it goes, people read things into shyness that can be interpreted as aloof or stuck up.
Mm-hmm.
Where does she think she is? And I think I fell into that category more than not. And it was the last thing I wanted, you know?
Yeah.
Me stuck up. I wanted a friend, you know?
Well, now, if you were shy, I mean, I hear this so many times, really, because actors have told me that they're shy, and I've had some singers and everything that have said the same thing. But how do you go from being shy to being in front of, thousands of people?
I know, it's just crazy, isn't it? Sort of, you must have a will to destroy yourself or something, because the strange thing is, I think about it a lot, because again, my first instinct when I go into a crowded room, a party or something, is to find the fastest corner and find a chair and sit in it.
Huh.
You know, and maybe somebody comes over and we'll start a conversation. That's okay. I'm really good on one-on-one. But, I don't know. I don't know what would possess a person who is just, it's painfully shy. I mean,
yeah.
Really. And I've gotten to the point where I know how to maneuver, in life being this way. But it's always a sense of like I'm almost holding my breath so I can get behind a closed door.
Yeah. Wow.
But I think it has to do with a real intense drive to communicate something of your most authentic self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's the only way you can do it if you're shy. Because if you're not, maybe I would have, just been a party animal, and gone out and told everybody everything. But being a person who couldn't communicate that unless I was on stage and allowed to do my songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank goodness for us. Who have enjoyed your music over all these years, that you did go out and make all those songs.
It's crazy. Absolutely. I can't believe it's been 50 years since Gather Me, which is the record label that I started with my husband. We were the first U.S. independent artists that ever opened their own label. The only other independent artists that had opened the label were the Beatles.
Right, yeah. Huh.
With Apple Records, and that was it. Neighborhood was it. And little did I know that I was flying in the faces of the status quo and the record industry as it existed then, and there were no independent artists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that everybody was beholden to different...
Yeah.
Record business people, and again, I made enemies in high places without even realizing that I was doing that. I just wanted to be independent so that I could, express really who I was instead of having like an image, put on me.
Yeah. Did you find that the record companies were, really controlling?
Oh yeah, definitely they. In fact, my first record label had a sneaky thing. They actually owned my copyright, which was illegal anyway. I won my copyrights back.
Wow!
Early on. That was when I was with Buddha Records.
Yeah,
and I won the rights back. And ironically, all these years later, somehow through legalese or whatever, I am not compensated for my copyrights at all. At this point, I have to go, you know, do it again. But I'm working with a company called Article 27 Music, and they are focusing on artists' rights. Hoping that 50 years later, Brand New Key, it's the 50th anniversary of that song, because that was on my own label.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rather than me.
Well, since you brought that song up, let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Brand New Key, a huge hit. I mean, it wasn't just a U.S. hit. It was hit all over the world. And did you think, now you wrote that song, ever think that, you know, this was going to be such a huge hit?
Not when I first started writing it, but I was married to a producer, and we were married for 47 years, and he heard the song. I wrote it following a very long fast. I was an early on quester for what's my perfect diet, what should people eat, mm-hmm. you know, and I was a vegetarian, I was a fruitarian, and I became a breatharian. Actually, I was fasting for 27 days on nothing but distilled water.
Wow.
And I had finished the fast of my fasting guru, Dr. Bernard Jensen, in Escondido, California, said, "Melanie, I think it's, you know, good time to break the fast." And so I did, and I went home to where I lived, and he said, "Now your perfect diet is going to occur to you." Now, I was having a problem. I wasn't really cut out to be a vegetarian. I was a blood type O, which is like the original blood type meat eater people. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, going against my natural body type. And so I kept getting sick. So that's why I kept experimenting with, well, I'll just eat fruit, you know, and I'll just eat this. And then maybe I'll add eggs. And, you know, I was looking, you know, I was wondering what to do. I didn't want to spend a lifetime being sick. So he himself was a vegetarian, this Dr. Jensen. And he said that just according to my body type and my blood type, I should eat meat. I was horrified because I was a vegetarian for quite a while. And I knew every horrible thing about why people should and should not eat meat and everything. But so I did incorporate it into my diet eventually. But I went home and he said, break the fast very gradually on partially cooked grated carrot or zucchini or something. And so I did that for maybe 4 or 5 days. And then I went to a flea market. And those were days when they would start at 4 a.m, you know, and you'd go with your flashlight, and I would say, "What's your dealer's price?" You know, and come home with a huge bag of people's old stuff for $10, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that was my fun. That was what I loved to do, and look through it, you know, later and think about how it was when these people used these farm tools or the first electric fan, you know, really weird stuff. I love hardware. I don't know why, but hardware, old hardware is really cool. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I was coming home and I was hungry, and we were passing something, and I got this wafting sense of something smelling so good, and I, what is that? What is that? And we were passing a McDonald's, and I said, "Well, Dr. Jensen said the perfect diet's gonna show itself to me, and that certainly smells really good." So from a 27-day fast and being a vegetarian, I went into McDonald's and ordered the whole works, you know, the burger, the fiberglass milkshake, and the rancid oil french fries. And I ate it all, and I didn't feel bad at all. In fact, I finished my last bite of burger, and that song came into my head. I got a brand new pair of roller skates. He got a brand new. And I really, really did. And so I went home, and I'm sitting at the edge of the bed, you know, with my guitar, and I'm playing it. And Peter said, my husband, record producer, Shameless Hit record producer, I might add. And he said, what's that? I said, oh, it's just like a little blues kind of ditty thing I was writing. He said, no, play that part again. You know, he did. He said, That's a hit. And I went, oh, no. No. If that's a hit, you know, I'll be doomed to be cute forever and ever. So, but sure enough, you know, we did go in the studio, and it turned out so different, you know. It was like nothing else. In fact, it was so different, I never imagined that radio would really play it. And in fact, it was banned on radio stations all across America because there were things being read into the lyrics really didn't exist in my head anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe subliminally somewhere in there, I did know, but I didn't really, it wasn't a conscious thing. I was thinking about roller skating and putting the little apparatus on your shoe and you needed a special key to tighten it to the sole of your shoe and going down Suicide Hill in New York. There was a hill called Suicide Hill, and I fell and broke my front tooth. And I was just thinking of all this stuff, and my dad holding the bicycle while I was learning, and, you know, taking the training wheels up, and you're holding, right? And you hear his voice get further and further away. I know that he wasn't holding the bike and I'd fall down. I was just having all these memories of growing up and bicycle riding and roller skating. And this song just came into my head all at once. And it was, you know, I'm going to tell you, I tried eating hamburgers again to see if it would happen, but it never did.
And isn't it surprising how many, when you write a song, or any, a lot of artists, when they'll write a song, and then people start picking it apart, and they start saying, they mean this. Oh, they mean this. Oh, no, this is bad, or this is good, or, you know. I wrote
it's
a song.
You know what? They're all right. They're all right, because, you know, I write a song, it's sort of like picking it out of the atmosphere. I really, really, I'm sure you've heard this from other writers, but I mean, well, sometimes people like to take more credit for what they do, so you might not hear it from other artists. I think a lot of songwriters, or even people involved with them, like to think that, you know, the artist slaved over this thing, you know, that they think is important or something. So, I know that I had this experience once in California, which is a place I stay away from mostly. But I was in LA, and the people who were doing a TV show contacted me and asked if I'd be interested in writing a piece of music for the show. So I said, well, yeah, why not? I'd never done that before. That would be kind of fun, new and different. So they gave me the task of coming up with the lyrics. And so I watched the show, a couple of episodes, and I had the first line in my head. It was the first time I loved forever. And I said, this is the most perfect thing. And I sang it to the producer, I think it was the next day, and they said, oh, well, we'll run it by the director, and we're going to run it by this guy, and we'll run it by that guy. And they said, no, it's not right. They want something that reflects his point of view and something that reflects her point of view. And I went back and forth with a legal pad full of lyrics. But I knew that the first lyric, it was so perfect. Mm-hmm. But this was before, you know, instant communication with computers or anything.
Right.
So there wasn't, there was only paper trail at that point. And I would submit my piece of paper and it was getting rejected. Everything I was writing was getting rejected. But I knew deep in myself that first thing I submitted was the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I kept rewriting it. I kept trying. I wasn't trying to be cute or anything. I was trying to please whatever they thought they were needing. And what I did finally was, after months of being tortured, I actually submitted the first thing I wrote. And the producer called me and said, "Melanie, you see, all your hard work paid off." And I won an Emmy for that.
Yes, yes. For the theme, the theme song to Beauty and the Beast, just so in case everybody is wondering what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm going to tell you, I mean, not to put it down or anything, but it's the last song I would have ever imagined would be an award-winning song. You know, mm-hmm. I've written so many songs, and for that to be the award. And people are so impressed with awards. I know it's like having that doctor title in front of your name or something.
Yeah,
you know, Grammy Award winning, you know, Emmy Award winning. So I finally had an Emmy Award winning title to have in front of my name. But you've got to hear my other songs.
yeah, that's for sure. You have so many. It's just incredible that what comes out of your head.
That's for sure. My mother thought so too. I'll tell you.
Well, when you redid now, Ruby Tuesday, did you sing that after the Rolling Stones or before the Rolling Stones?
It was. They had released it on an album, and
okay.
It wasn't, I don't think it was like their major hit or anything.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a lot of people thought I wrote it because it became such a big hit, especially in Europe. It was like, if you say Melanie in Europe, they'll say, "You're maybe not Melanie Ruby Tuesday." And a lot of people thought I wrote it. But it was pretty much as the album was coming out, I think, their album.
Yeah.
And in fact, I have a picture of Mick Jagger wearing this big button, a promotional button. It says, "Hear Melanie's Ruby Tuesday any day."
Was it intimidating singing a song by the Rolling Stones?
No. We were, it wasn't like that, you know. I mean, I knew there were big deals, but we were all working at the same time, you know,
right.
And I was doing a festival that they were in, and, you know, there's so many different kinds of echelons now, you know, where it didn't feel like that then. There was, I mean, at Woodstock, there were people from all genres and, in fact, that's, I think, the key error in the whole Let's Do Woodstock is that they just keep signing the usual suspects, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you can see these people at Coachella, why should you go out of your way to a place called Woodstock where it's really very difficult to get to and there aren't a lot of places to stay? You'd really need to really get that essence of what it was, you know, which was this incredible eclectic mix of, you know, there was Shauna, you know,
and
Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin and Ravi Shankar and Tim Hardin and Melanie, you know, it was all over the map. And I think that's what the original people who keep trying to tap into, they think they own the name, so that's all they need. But I think they really need to rethink who is happening now, not so much as who's going to attract the most kids, you know?
Right.
I think it's more get a really good bunch of artists and you'll get people.
So what was that experience like for you? I've had a couple of people. In fact, you mentioned Sha-na-na. Henry Gross was on the show just about a month or so ago. And quite a few years ago, I had Wavy Gravy on.
He's great.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was an experience, believe me. I was sitting down live with him. So that was a little unusual for me.
I was on tour with him, too. We did something called, I think it was the Hippie Fest.
and that was
quite an experience, but he's a genuine person, you know. So
it's
really nice to know that there are some people who are still who they are.
So was Woodstock a surprise to you, how it turned out, or was
it, you know, it was amazing. I was in the same office building, not me and Peter. Peter was a producer before I was even a singer. And he had an office in the same building as Kama Sutra and Buddha Records. Mm-hmm. And then I was on Buddha Records for a bit. And it just kind of occurred, you know. This was a year before the actual festival. It was going to be called an Aquarian Exposition. It wasn't called Woodstock yet.
Yeah.
And somehow, you know, between Peter and me and them, and, you should be there, you know. And so I was going to be there. And then my career started, you know, happening in Europe. So I was in England and doing little showcases and meeting people, and I was writing a film score, and I met Rod Stewart, but he wasn't Rod Stewart yet. He was in a group called The Faces. That was probably the most famous person I had met, and would go to the Hard Rock, which was like the first Hard Rock, you know, in London.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the only place you could get an American hamburger. And so that was the scene there, and my career was kind of like buzzing, you know.
Yeah.
And I was in the studio, and the Rolling Stones were in the studio next door, and there was big things happening, you know, like I was writing with John Campbell, who's became like the arranger for films, and it didn't seem like something called the Aquarian Exposition was very important, and I mean, it wasn't because of the importance, but it didn't seem like I should leave in the middle of a recording session for a film and go do this. So Peter and I talked about it, and finally we decided, yeah, you should go, you know. And he stayed behind to work in the studio and mix things and stuff. And then I was going to go home, and my mother picked me up to do this. What I was thinking was going to be like a festival, like people with picnic blankets and, you know, families, and there was going to be arts and crafts, which was exciting to me. I could go shopping and, you know, maybe get some cool clothes or something, you know, the tie-dye things. And so I had no clue whatsoever. It was before I didn't get any of the hype. For sure. And so we started to go up there, and we hit traffic, and I'm still not sure, you know, what this is about. And the traffic turned out to be traffic miles and miles from the site, and I had to make phone calls, and this is before cell phones, you know. So you know, find a phone booth and call somebody. You called somebody and said, no, no, don't go there. It's over here. And I'll meet you at the hotel in Bessel. And Bessel? And then I'm thinking, oh, my God, now the terror started to mount. You know, I realized this is something a little bigger than I had envisioned. And we get to this hotel, and it's surrounded by media and all kinds of, you know, mainstream media trucks and everything all around. And I walk into the lobby, and there's Janis Joplin. I had never, again, never met anybody famous except the guy from The Faces. You know?
Yeah.
And so there's just, and I'm thinking, I'm looking at my mom, and I'm thinking, I've got to get out of here. I don't think they really want to have me. I think that they must have made a mistake, you know, and forgot to tell me. But I'm looking, and there's Sly Stone walks by.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to get out of here. And I was all by myself except for my mother, me and my mom, you know, and a guitar. That's it. No other musicians, no percussionist, no bass player, no background vocalist, no entourage, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, how do I get out of this? And somebody's, Melanie, Melanie. And I turn around, and this guy says, yeah, go to the helicopter. And so we start jogging toward the helicopter, and I'm thinking, why do I have to go to a helicopter? You know, I've never been on a helicopter, and I didn't want to be on a helicopter. And everything I heard about them is that they're not really meant to fly. So I didn't really think of that. And so we're at the entrance of the helicopter, and somebody turns and says, who's she? To my mother. And I said, oh, it's my mom. And they said, oh, sorry, no, mom. Sorry, mom. Bye, mom. And I got in the helicopter by myself.
Wow.
I know. I didn't even have, like, the savvy to say, oh, that's my roadie. You know? Or my background singer. Or,
right.
You know, something where they would let her on. So I had nothing to say except bye, mom. And I got in, and we took off, and there were other people in the helicopter. I had no idea who they were. They were probably, you know, tech people or something. Mm-hmm. And I assumed, because it was such a rush, that I was going to be on next. Again, had no clue how many people were there. I looked down at the field, a field, and I thought it was some kind of thing growing. Because I saw these different colors, and, you know, from the perspective of where I was, it almost looked like, you know, a crop of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the pilot, what is that? And he says, people. And I went, no, I mean, right down below us. Yeah, it's people. And then he points to the distance, and he says, that's the stage. And there was this, you know, size of a football field thing. I'd never been on anything bigger than a, you know, a little step up the stage.
Wow.
But here I was going to descend this field, and now I'm totally in terror. I'm thinking, this is impossible. I can't do this. I mean, I only played 3 chords on a guitar. How can I do this? So I'm thinking, how can I get out of here? How can I get? And I got off the helicopter, and they led me to a little tent with a dirt floor. And in my semi-conscious absorbing things, I noticed there was a big tent. But I didn't think of it much for the rest of the day. But in a little bit further from the little tent was a big tent. And that was, I think, where all the big celebrities were. I was virtually unknown. I had one song that a DJ in New York, Roscoe, on WNEW-FM played, Beautiful People. Yeah. And it was what they called the turntable hit, because the record company didn't really believe in it at all and didn't supply the radio record stores. So the Roscoe started playing it, and it went what we call now viral. And it was like all the underground radio stations are playing it. And in fact, pirate radio stations are playing it in Europe. And it was the only song, if anything, that maybe 1% of that audience at Woodstock knew. And I waited all day in this tent. And I thought, again, because Richie Havens was on when I descended onto the field, and I thought, I'm probably next, you know, so I'm like, you know, in terror, about to throw up, you know. And I thought I was on next, and it just kept going that way all day. You know, somebody would come up and say, you're next, and then they'd say, never mind, or sometimes they wouldn't even bother to say never mind. I would just not be on stage and I'd hear somebody else. So I knew it wasn't me. But it was like that all day until night. And Ravi Shankar was on, and it had started to rain, and I'm thinking, oh, my prayers are answered. Everybody's going to go home now because it's raining, and nobody's going to stay. Everybody's going to get up and go home, and I'm saved. I won't have to do this, and I'll go back to the studio in England, and it'll be all the way it was. And just as I'm in that reverie, somebody came on, come into the tent and said, you're on next. Wow. Only this time it was for real.
So when you went on, was it, I mean, did you have like butterflies or anything when you were?
Butterflies are cute. There was nothing cute about this. It was horrible.
Wow.
It was absolute. I mean, I was in such terror all day long. I mean, the only sweet moment I remembered was I had developed this deep bronchial cough, and I was coughing. It sounded like the demons were coming out of me. And I mean, it was so deep. And again, you can't even imagine. I was like, I was in a face of firing squad.
Jeez.
You know, and I started to walk toward that. The nicest thing that happened was Joan Baez heard me from the upper echelon tent and sent over her assistant. Well, she said she was her assistant, and said, Joan heard you coughing and thought you might like this. And it was a pot of tea with lemon and honey.
Hmm.
And that was the sweetest thing that ever happened at Woodstock for me during the wait,
yeah,
you know, to
yeah.
get on. And because everybody always thinks, oh, you got to hang out with Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin and everything. You know, no. I was in my little tent suffering and thinking of how I could get out. I didn't even have a set. I didn't have a set list. Do you believe that?
Really?
I'm like, no, it's not like, this wasn't a career move. This was just a concert I was going to, you know, a festival. It was going to be a big arts and crafts thing. And,
yeah.
you know,
so
it was
you...
not, was had no thought that this was what it was going to be. There weren't going to be 500,000 people in front of me.
Yeah. So you just winged it?
Yep. Wow. I had just written a song called, I'm going to tell you this because it was a pretty amazing thing. I left my body, and I wasn't doing drugs. I actually walked on the stage, and I'm walking on that plank bridge, and I, for whatever the amount of fear that was in me, I was no longer in my body.
Hmm.
I watched myself walk on the stage. And I watched myself sit down. It was all quiet. And I saw myself sit down, my body. I saw it sitting down. And I saw the people. And I was just not in my body. And then at some point, I went like back. I'm there.
Wow.
And I was, you know, singing my first song, and people were, whether they knew it or not, had seen this phenomenal thing happen, whether they were conscious of what it was. I actually came back into my body in front of 500,000 people, which I think might be the reason why me at Woodstock was phenomenal, because I walked on that stage pretty much an unknown person and walked off the stage a celebrity.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. Huh. That's incredible.
Yeah.
How many songs did you do in your set?
I did a 30-minute set.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I didn't know till way later, when they were doing, like, I think it was the 40th anniversary of Woodstock, a film crew came to where I was. I was in Florida at the time, and they talked to me about all the different experiences. And we had lots of interviews, and they did lots of footage. And I think it was for the History Channel it was supposed to be on.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them all about my out-of-body experience. And my experience about saying things like that is that it's never put on. I mean, they always edit that part out.
Really?
Huh. Yeah. So I didn't really think about that, or I was just talking, and they said, "Oh, so you've seen your set at Woodstock, right?" I said, "No, I never did. I don't even know what songs I sang. I do know I sang Mama Mama. I sang Tuning My Guitar. I sang Birthday of the Sun, which was a song I had just written."
Yeah.
I'd never recorded it. It wasn't out. I had just written it, and because it was raining, there were references to the rain. So I just started singing it, you know, Birthday of the Rain, Birthday of the Sun, Happy Birthday to the Rain. So, and that was the song that was on the Woodstock album, of all things.
Yeah.
And people who, you know, like I call them born again hippies, you know, kids who have the album from vinyl stores, you know, say, "Oh, do Birthday of the Rain." And I don't sing that song. I mean, I think I sang it once at Woodstock.
Wow.
And it got recorded, you know. But, yeah, no. So, I mean, that the experience of me at Woodstock was, for me, it was a personal epiphany, really, because I had never left my body before.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, you know, that was an awakening.
Wow. Jeez, that's incredible. So now we could go on through all your songs, but you know we'd be here for days. I wanted to ask you about your song "What Have They Done to My Song, Ma?" And of course, a lot of people have done it over, and it's called "Look What They've Done to My Song, Ma." But with that song, is there a meaning behind that? Were you writing something?
It was quite literal. I was in the studio, and again, Peter and I were the most odd couple, because he was, again, an extrovert. He was a shameless hit record producer. Just anything he could make into a hit, he would. So, I don't know what we were working on, but we were working on a song, and I was in the vocal booth. You know, I assumed the mic was off, and because they were working on something, and it was an isolation booth, you know, a soundproof vocal booth. So I'm in there, and I just started writing "Look What They've Done to My Song." It was totally literal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, but the great thing about it is that it could be applied to so many things, especially in the arts, you know, where you start creating something and you think it's going to turn out this way or that, and then, you know, if it's a visual, it gets to print, and they botch the colors, or they change the way it's cropped or something, you know, and it's turned into something else.
Yeah.
Turned it out all wrong.
Huh. Yeah. Well, and then you got another hit out of it.
it was a hit because I had another song that was out at the time, and it was I think it was the New Seekers who recorded it, and a massive hit, you know, that was like everywhere, and so people didn't even know I wrote that, you know, till later.
Well, Melanie, I know there's so many things we could go over, but I do want to talk about your concert, the live stream concert that's coming up this Saturday, June 26, 2021, because there'll be people listening to this for years, and they won't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But
and you know, it's been so weird not being able to connect with people. In fact, I did the first thing. It was just a guest appearance at a local festival here in Tennessee, and it was the first time I had sung in front of people looking right at you, you know. We've had to compensate. We've had to think of ways. We couldn't just I was really depressed for a while because tours canceled and wasn't able, and then people started going crazy, and the world went mad,
right.
You know, one day. I just looked up, and everybody was nuts.
I think you got a song in that somewhere.
I'm sure there's, I've written quite a few songs. And, in fact, there'll be an album coming out soon.
Oh, good.
I was thinking, it almost sounds generic, but I was thinking of calling it Timeless. Because there's something so pretty about that word, and somebody wrote me a nice little thing on, I don't know, my social media, and they said, "You're just timeless," and I thought, "Oh, I like that." Hmm. You know, it almost sounds like it would be a Johnny Mantis title,
right? Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Timeless, but I don't know, but somehow it just has this beautiful crystalline sound, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
The word itself, it just has, because of the T and the S, it's just so pretty. So I was actually toying with that as a title. But we have a lot of new songs. And you know, I was writing, but it was strange. It was such a strange, because it was, I'm older, you know, and people have been asking, when are you going to retire? And I don't think I'm going to do that. You know, I'll just be singing my last note and I'll go to the next place.
Yeah.
Offstage will be really offstage.
Right.
So, I don't know. You know, it was very hard to get to the place where I felt like I'm really communicating with people.
Mm-hmm.
So the live stream was it. And, now I feel like I got it. You know?
Yeah.
I know how to do this. You know? And we put up a bunch of stuffed animals. You know, they're my audience. Because I can't just look at a microphone.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, you want something. And I swear we have a stuffed owl. And I got him. You know, he gave me a standing ovation after it was all over. Really.
So where can people connect for this live stream?
Oh, good question. They go to my social media and, you know, I have everything. I have everything you're supposed to have, much to my dismay, really. It's such a pain, all of, you know, keeping up with all of this. I know that there are people who are so good at it that you know who they are, even if you don't know what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but it's Melanie somewhere in there, I'm sure, if you look in my social media, and anything you could do to help remind them, that would be great.
Yeah. And now, what is your social media that they can connect to? Is it Instagram or Twitter? Or?
Oh, Instagram and Facebook and what's the other? My website.
Yep, your website. Okay. So all those places they can connect and
yes.
See it.
And they'll be able to see.
Get information for that. And
yeah.
Then hear a great concert on Saturday.
Yes, Saturday.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have an after party. This should be interesting.
Oh, really? Wow.
On a Zoom after party, yeah.
Wow.
Or buy a special ticket and we'll have a conversation. Yeah. Well, I miss that, too. You know, usually after a show, and that was funny. At the beginning, you know, the agents and managers had this thing, you know, I have to leave. Elvis has left the building kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
You have to just get out and be inaccessible. But for me, that was sheer misery. To go back to a hotel room after, you know, having a wonderful, you know, sharing experience with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to have that experience after the show of saying hello and they help me get back down to earth, you know, mm-hmm. so that I can go to sleep. But, you know, just going back to your hotel room after a thing like that, no wonder people do drugs, you know. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, you have all this energy, you know, you just shared emotional things that are more personal than anything you've shared with anybody. And to go back, be by yourself, I never got it. So
yeah.
I kind of got a reputation for being the person who'd go out and hang out and talk to people.
Wow,
and sign things. And
yeah.
People tell you their story, you know, what it was. Now, especially after all these years, there are people who have the most amazing experiences that my music somehow soundtracked, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It just truly is amazing. I never thought that it would have such an impact
yeah.
on people.
Yeah.
It's music is that, you know, it's timeless.
Yeah.
It really is. It makes time much more bearable.
Yeah. And you never know what a song will do to help somebody through something or
I know,
you know?
I know. I mean, I've heard that, you know, that I was suicidal and this song really helped me, or, you know, different things. You lost a loss of some kind, loss of someone you love, and
mm-hmm.
hold on to that song. It gives you something, because music is so powerful,
mm-hmm.
really powerful.
Yeah.
And that's why it's been made so trivial.
Well, Melanie,
get it.
I want to finish up with one more question, or actually two-part question. But
okay.
I do want to make sure that everybody knows that this Saturday, June 26th, 2021, you're going to be having a live stream concert. They can get all the information at your social, either going to Facebook and just type in Melanie Safka, and they'll find you and get all the information there, and they can have a great, great show on Saturday. So, the final question.
Yeah, it's nearly a 2-hour show.
2 hours,
and,
wow.
Because I've done a long, long concert. And, at least 2 hours. And it has going to have three camera angles. And my son and he figured out everything.
Yeah.
He's pretty amazing. And he plays guitar and all kinds of other things, flutes and stuff.
Wow, great. Okay, the final question. When you sit back and relax, what are your favorite TV shows now and of the past, and what are your favorite movies now and of the past?
Oh, I don't watch television.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's bad for you.
Yeah.
The movies that I love and I can watch over and over again. One is Being There.
Yes, yeah, with Peter Sellers.
One of the, yeah, that's just a killer movie.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the Rita Tushingham movies. I love Rita Tushingham. She just had such a way of expressing And Crackers. Have you ever seen Crackers with Donald Sutherland?
I think I have a long time ago.
Amazing. Got to see it again. And also another movie that really got panned was Ishtar.
Oh, yes.
It's about the two songwriters. I thought that was, I think you might have to be a songwriter to get it, but yeah. I thought it was so brilliant. Yeah. People just panned it to death.
Well, that was like
I don't know why.
That was
so
like
good.
The old Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, Roach type shows, you know, films.
Yeah. They went in all the, just the way they got their inspiration, you know, to see something fall on the ground and, oh, that's a line. It fell on the ground, you know. And it's just so, all the cheese ball stuff. People just don't, I don't know. I thought it was so funny. I was in the movie theater, the only one laughing. But I thought they really, really got it. Ishtar.
Yeah. Well, Melanie, I cannot tell you what an honor it's been to have you on the show. And
thank you
so much for your music that you've given us over the years. And I wish you luck with your concert coming up this Saturday, June 26th. And thank you so much for sharing with us.
Well, thank you. And I'll see you again in person. Who knows?
And a big thank you going out to Melody for joining us here at On Screen and Beyond. And it's just so great to talk with her because she's given us so much great music over the years. And I just love those songs. And if you haven't, if you're young and you don't know these songs, check them out because she's just a fantastic singer. And she's truly a musical icon. There's just no way around it. And be sure to check out her live stream concert on Saturday, June 26, 2021. And she said it's going to be over 2 hours. So it's going to be quite a concert. I'm sure she's going to sing all her great hits and even more than that. And it's just going to keep going and going and going. So be sure to check it out on Saturday. And, that's about it for that part of our show here at On Screen and Beyond. But I want to remind you, tell a friend about On Screen and Beyond. Let them hear all these people, these great people who are giving us such fantastic stories about their life and their music and their movies and their TV shows and everything. We've got it all here at On Screen and Beyond. Over 557 wonderful guests that have given us so much information about themselves. And we try to squeeze in as much as we can. You know, we could talk for hours for all our guests, but sometimes, you know, we can only get in as much as we can or they have time for. So we appreciate any amount that they can give us. And it's just so good to hear their stories. So tell a friend. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts. That's the new thing for subscribing. So you can call it, you know, I don't know why they change it. Most likely because of the social media and all that. They follow instead of subscribe and all that. So anyways, that's the new way to do it. And be sure to do that wherever you are on a podcast. If they have a subscribe or a follow or something that will get you the latest show right off the bat without you having to do it, that's the best way to get it, because otherwise, once our 557 and climbing, you know, each week we do a new show, but we've been putting up all our old episodes for you, and once those are all up, you're going to have to go through a lot of different shows to figure out what you want to hear. If you get them right off the bat, then you can decide easier, you know, you don't have to look for them. So we'd appreciate you doing that too, of course, because the more people that listen to On Screen and Beyond, the more the word gets out, and we have listeners all over the world. We had Belgium just come on a little while ago, and we also have Israel and just everybody all over the world. And of course, California and Florida seem to be they're not the largest. We have more listeners on other states, but they have the largest variety of towns and cities that have downloaded from. And it's just, you know, amazing to see all these different places. A lot of places I've never even heard of. So it's always interesting to see. And I sort of, you know, I like to go in and see, where is this town? Or where is this city or whatever? We love hearing from you. And also love hearing from you if you want to send me an email. And that would be great if you could do that. And if you are on Anchor.fm, you can, if you go there to find it, or whenever I post on any of the socials, if you click on that, that will take you to Anchor FM. And at that point, you can get to any of the podcast providers to get it, or you can get it right there at Anchor FM. And also, they have a little button that says message. Now, if you click that, you can actually talk your message to me, and it will be sent to me. So if you want to do that, appreciate that. Always love to hear from people, and hopefully it's good things. But yeah, if you want to send a complaint or a suggestion, that's fine. I don't mind that. I've had people send me nasty things before. It's hey, I got thick skin. So, but I do. I really appreciate when people send things talking about what they do like, and if it's something I can do. If there's a suggestion for a guest that you want to send me, do it that way, or just send me an email at feedback@onscreenandbeyond.com. Like I said, I love hearing from you. So that's it, and we've got another episode coming your way that's going to be an interesting one, as always. And, of course, every day we'll get you a new episode up there whenever we can. And that's it. That's a wrap for this episode of On Screen and Beyond. So until next time, when we once again take you on screen and beyond, I'm Brian Zemrak. Take care. We'll be right back.